Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. This is hour two of our show for the 11th of January. It's our show that's part of the Faith Radio Network, in which we cover so many of the different topics and news headlines of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective. Sure enjoyed hour one, in which we heard from Mike Krueger and Gary Stratton about some different dimensions of our faith. And up first here in hour two, we're going to be joined by Adam Holtz in just a minute. But I got a couple headlines to get into as well that I found interesting this morning, and especially as it relates to the immigration conversation in our country. We see that there's a study that finds that U.S. fertility rates are hitting a new low. A new report from the National Center for Health Statistics shows Americans are not having enough babies to maintain the population. To reproduce itself at the current numbers, the fertility rate needs to average 2,100 births for every 1,000 women of childbearing age. But data released yesterday shows a current rate that falls about 16% short of what's needed. The study reveals a steady 7-year decline in the U.S. fertility rate, with 2017 marking a new low. I know that's one of the generational trends among the millennials, that they're not having children or as many children or having them much later in life. So I find that interesting. The next headline, and I'm going to bring Adam in for this part of the headlines as a dad of, I believe, three kids, and find out his take on this one. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. And you do have three children, right?
I do. Yeah, they're 8, 10, and 12.
Love it. So in your family, I'm curious about how your kids and maybe your wife would respond to this headline. It says that a study was done and says that men are more sensitive to pain than women. It says researchers say it's because women forget pain faster than men. Males also get more stressed out when they experience pain in a location that has been previously injured. It was a study published in the Medical Journal of Current Biology. Adam, certainly I will say that this is true in our household. I know that I broke my nose on a recycle lid earlier this week, and boy, I'll tell you what, I acted as if my world had come to an end.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, unless one of us could be in multiple genders' bodies simultaneously, I don't even know how you objectively study that. I mean, sometimes I just hear headlines, I'm like, well, that's interesting, and, you know, I know they have ways to measure stuff like that, but it sort of would be one that I would say, none of my kids like pain. I don't like pain. My wife doesn't like pain. I think, you know, to get spiritual for a minute, I think all of us are going to experience things that hurt. And some of us, you know, may feel them in different ways than others. But, you know, we all have a chance to respond in those moments to God or to people who are in our lives who are hurting. And so, you know, none of us like pain. It's a result of the fall, and we all have to deal with it.
Well, you know, Rachel Sutton here in studio, I think she started out pretty skeptical, Adam, and she thought, yeah, this is very true. Men definitely don't experience pain in the same way as women, but you may have convinced her. Rachel, do you have a quick take on this? Did Adam manage to convince you to change your mind otherwise?
You know, I just liked how you made it theological and brought it deep, but I do think that, how do I say this politely? But, like, I feel like men react bigger when they get sick or hurt.
Okay, Adam, so who stays on the couch longer?
When I get sick, everybody just expects me to keep making dinner and doing the dishes and getting them cups of water. So I don't get any special treatment on my end. So maybe I'm just bitter.
Well, we'll definitely have to figure out a way to objectively study this. Maybe you and I can do some qualitative research in the upcoming year, Adam, where we kind of see how things go when either we are sick or our wives are sick.
Or, you know, I could fly out and we can just bash each other with hammers, like, you know, some sort of old cartoon or something.
Oh, I'm in for that. If you can be Wile E. Coyote, I'd be happy to be the Roadrunner.
Exactly.
Lots to get to in the movie scene and Golden Globes as well. So we'll take a short break, Adam. When we come back, we'll get into some of the movies and TV shows of the day. It's about 10 minutes after the hour here in Faith Radio Mornings. We've been chatting with Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com. You know, if you listen here on Fridays, that Adam joins us each Friday. And we very much advocate and highly recommend for PluggedIn.com. It's a great resource for those of us that are parents and grandparents and wonder what our kids might be watching or what to anticipate if we do go to a movie or watch something that is streaming on Netflix, Amazon Prime, one of these kinds of stations. And Adam, I know that some of the headlines in the last week in media had to do with Golden Globes. Before we get into some of the obvious comments that we need to talk about with Christian Bale and Dick Cheney and Satan and some of these comments, just give us a quick overview of what you saw in the Golden Globes.
Well, you know, the Golden Globes is always an interesting broadcast on multiple levels, in part because everybody is usually indulging themselves the whole time in terms of what they're drinking, and people get a little bit looser than, say, the Academy Awards. And so you never know what to expect, but the big surprise this year was, you know, with the exception of Christian Bale, it wasn't people behaving badly. It was the stuff that actually won the big awards. And we had not one, but two pretty big upsets. Bohemian Rhapsody, starring Rami Malek in the role of Freddie Mercury, this biopic, was a surprise winner for Best Drama and Best Actor. And almost everybody had thought A Star Was Born was a lock on this stuff, that Bradley Cooper and that this, you know, the latest remake of this movie that's been done, I think, four times now, was going to win. So there was really shock that this one won. And over on the other side, Vice was really expected to win the Best Comedy Prize, but Green Book ended up taking that, and that's the story, of course, of an African-American pianist in the 1960s who tours the South, or maybe the 1950s, excuse me. And so we had surprises on, you know, both of the big categories, and it maybe scrambled the calculus for the Oscar race a little bit. People, I think, are less certain now of, you know, what the obvious front runner is going to be, since neither of the front runners won, you know, in this award show.
And you referenced a couple movies there. Remind me, Gary, first of all, on Bohemian Rhapsody, I know my kids were talking about seeing it the other day. They're 17 and or 16 and 19. And with that one, there is some content in terms of some same-gender relationships and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, there is. And, you know, and I think for mature older teens, there's not going to be anything there that I think is, you know, an absolute deal killer. I mean, we're growing up, they're growing up in a world today where this kind of stuff is everywhere. But definitely for younger teens, you know, my 12-year-old has heard We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions and Another One Bites the Dust. And, you know, they're kind of classic songs that linger in our cultural memory. And he really wanted to go. And I just said, you know what, there's just too much stuff here that really is inappropriate for, definitely for a younger tween or teen audience. But, you know, I think for older teens, there's not going to be anything here that's too shocking for them.
And we had a guest at the end of last hour that teaches a theology of film course at Johnson University, and he was talking about Green Book being quite a rich movie and very much worth seeing.
Yeah, and Green Book is really, you know, a different take on, you know, kind of the odd couple. You've got Viggo Mortensen, who plays this guy from, you know, New York, who gets hired to drive this famous African-American pianist through the South during a time when segregation was still very much affecting our culture. And so it's two men from very, very different worlds really learning about each other. And it's a movie about friendship. It's a movie about loyalty. And again, it's another one that has, I think, some terrific themes to it, but it's got a smattering of same-sex content as well. It's got some profanity. So there are definitely still issues here, especially for any kind of younger audience. And if you have any interest in this movie at all, or anything else that's in theaters, as you mentioned earlier, come to PluggedIn.com and check it out and get all of the details you need to make an informed decision for your family.
Well, getting back into what we already referenced, but it certainly were some of the headlines coming out of the Golden Globes, was Christian Bale's comments about Dick Cheney and the role that he played. He was widely lauded for his ability to transform himself to look so much like the former vice president. But what did you see coming out of this situation?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it sort of feels like, you know, online we talk about trolling, where somebody says something just to get a reaction. And this sort of felt like Christian Bale trolling conservatives to me. Obviously, this is a movie that doesn't do any favors for Dick Cheney. It paints him to be really kind of a monster in a lot of ways. I'll admit, Christian Bale's portrayal of him was was shockingly remarkable. I mean, I saw and reviewed the movie, and they did a good job, you know, helping him step into that character. But, you know, the other thing I think that's going on here, and I think he may have been poking maybe more lightly than we would have thought, is often we hear stars get up and thank God or thank Jesus, and I think he was just sort of getting up and, you know, kind of playfully mocking people who do that. And obviously comparing anybody to Satan is not a very nice thing to do, but I don't want to probably elevate Christian Bale's comments any higher than they need to be elevated. It's the kind of thing that we would expect somebody in this kind of role to say, and, you know, he's gotten a lot of mileage out of it, that's for sure.
Yeah, is it, and overall in terms of a movie we're seeing, or is this one of those movies that's Netflixable? Is it a cheap movie theater? Is it go see it right away? What was your thought on this, Adam?
Well, I don't think it's a go see it right away movie, and I will say that Adam McKay, who has previously done mostly comedies, and this is more of a dramedy, it's a dark comedy, it's not a pure comedy. It's a skillfully made film that, you know, he says it's all based on historical stuff so that he can't get sued. But this is a movie that definitely plays to the progressive left, and I think for those who are on that side of the political spectrum, they're going to cheer for it. I think those who are on the right are going to groan a lot. And I think anybody who's in the middle, honestly, this is just the movie that's going to make you more cynical about everything. There's not much upside in terms of redemptive quality here, and I think for me, I just walked out feeling worse about the state of American politics, just about the reality of where we're at in so many ways today. You know, it's not an edifying movie at all. It's one that takes lots of cheap shots. And so my guess is that the vast majority of the Faith Radio audience isn't going to find this a particularly enjoyable movie in theaters or on Netflix.
Well, I certainly wasn't planning on rushing out to see it, so that helps, Adam. I'll take a short break on this one. I've got to ask you about some movies that have just come out, including a movie you and I have chatted about a little bit, but I want to go over it again. It's the movie Escape Room. I know my daughter's turning 17 at the end of this month, and she got invited to some sort of escape room party. So I got to admit, I'm not super up to date on this stuff, Adam. I'm going to look to you for some relevance here coming up next on Faith Radio Mornings. About 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, joined by Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com as our go-to site for anything review-related to movies, TV shows, video games, all of that. And Adam, there's this new movie, Escape Room, and I haven't seen much about it other than a few trailers. And as I referenced before the break, my 16, soon-to-be 17-year-old daughter may be having some sort of escape room birthday party. I'm really hoping that party doesn't represent what we see in the trailer.
Well, I hope so, too, because I'm sure your daughter is a lovely human being and we want to keep her around a while. Escape rooms are a relatively new trend where you collect a bunch of people that you, I guess, like and want to do crazy things with, and you get locked into a room and you have to search the room for clues to get out. And honestly, boy, I'm 48 and it doesn't sound like a good time to me. So this is not how I want to spend my evening, but I guess the youngsters have not escaped enough things in life, and so they're still looking to these sort of things for entertainment. The movie itself plays on this whole escape room theme, and six people end up in this high-end escape room that turns out to be a killer escape room, and several of them don't make it out alive. People die badly. There's some heroism involved. There's, you know, some language and nasty violence involved. You know, for my money, this is a movie that you'll be better, you know, you'll want your $2 and $10 back afterwards if you go to this one.
Well, I'm 48 years old as well, Adam, and we referenced the pain conversation earlier. It sure seems like this would be an opportunity for you and I to see our level of pain threshold.
Well, it seems like it could be that kind of experience. I guess we'll have to take our wives to get a true indication of of, you know, the male versus female thing on this one.
I love it. I see another movie coming out here on the basis of sex. This is related to the story of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's been in the headlines lately, one of the Supreme Court justices who has been out of some of the proceedings sick, and they found some cancerous nodes and nodules on her lungs that sounds like they were able to get everything. But, boy, she's really lived quite a story.
It really is quite a story, and I know that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is not a hero to most conservatives. I think that, most conservatives would see her on the other side of some issues that, we really care deeply about. That said, this is a, very sympathetic portrayal of her, starring Felicity Jones, and, we really see her as a groundbreaking feminine figure in a male-dominated world. When she went to Harvard, you know, she was one of just a, handful of women in the first couple of classes at Harvard Law School. And so we see her running up against the sort of systemic discrimination against women that was still very, very much a part of our culture in so many ways 50 years or so ago. And, so this movie just follows her career. It's an inspiring movie. There's a lot to like here just in terms of its depiction of her character. And again, you know, it's a cinematic take that really is trying to shine her, show her in the best light. So you've got to take that into consideration. And so we, you know, we make a statement about liking the movie apart from the reality of who she is as a political figure today. So if she's somebody you're interested in or just curious about her story, I think that this movie does a, reasonably accurate depiction of what she went through. And the other thing that's interesting is that it depicts her marriage in a very positive light. So in some ways, even though she's a progressive figure, this is a very traditional kind of romance movie, which might have caught some people by surprise, and it's something that, we actually liked about this movie.
Interesting. Well, I'm always looking for movies as well to take my young kids to, and I see a movie's come out called A Dog's Way Home, and anything with puppies involved, I've got to believe it's not super objectionable.
Not super objectionable. A couple of small caveats. A Dog's Way Home is almost by default the best dog movie of 2019, and dog movies have a number of fairly standard features. They're all in play here. They have adorable dogs. They have owners who love them, and usually there's something that separates those two from each other. And in this case, we have the story of a dog named Bella. She gets separated from her owner, Lucas, and has to travel from New Mexico to Denver over the wilderness, and she, you know, encounters wolves and a mountain lion and starvation and all sorts of stuff, you know, en route back home to her owner. And, you know, with that in mind, my 8-year-old, when we watched this, she got a little bit cringy at a couple points. The mild peril that poor Bella had to deal with was frightening to her, and we kept telling her, it's going to be okay, all right? This is not Old Yeller. It's all going to work out all right. The other thing that was a little bit of a surprise that parents will want to know about is that for a while, Bella ends up with two guys who live together, and I think it's pretty clear that they're in a romantic relationship, but the film is subtle about it. I mean, there's no physical affection or anything that absolutely tips us off to that. But as we have talked about, that's an issue that's showing up everywhere. It's showing up in cartoons. It's showing up in kids' movies. And here we have another example of something that, you know, parents may not have expected that storyline to show up in a nice PG-rated dog movie. But here it is again, and it's just a reminder that we've got to be willing to step into these sorts of issues. It's also subtle enough that I think kids may miss it completely, but parents should be aware of it.
Yeah, Adam, we have just a little bit less than a minute left here. And in terms of just that, there does seem to be this increasing kind of a wink and a nod, and there needs to be some sort of portrayal of a gay relationship in so many movies these days.
Yeah, it's just, it's almost like it they feel like it has to be in everything, and there's no way around this. So parents have to decide when and how they're going to deal with this issue with their kids and, the media that they consume.
Well, I certainly appreciate the insight that you bring. It just, I know I've said it over and over again, but it remains true how helpful so many of the reviews are that you guys do at PluggedIn.com. So thanks again for joining us here on a Friday, Adam, and have a great weekend.
We'll talk to you next week, Peter.
Sounds good. We'll take a break here for some Breakpoint and bottom of the hour news. In the second half of this hour, I was joined yesterday for a taping interview with Dr. Julie Slattery, and we talked a lot about the shape of sexuality in our country today. Coming up after the news here on Faith Radio Mornings, you'll listen to a taped interview I did yesterday with Dr. Julie Slattery. She's coming into town a week from tomorrow, that being the 19th of January, to Berean Baptist Church. So if you're anywhere near the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, she's holding a full-day conference at the church in which she's going to address different dimensions of sexuality, specifically rethinking sexuality and how we can build a foundation for that. So don't miss the interview and look to sign up for that conference as well.
If you have kids at home, I want to remind you of something important. This parenting thing, it's not about you. Hi, I'm Mark Grayston with Parenting Today's Teens. Moms, dads, grandparents, this isn't about us. It's about our kids. Our parenting should not be a display of effort so our self-esteem is boosted when everyone sees what a good kid we've raised. When a child fails, it's not a reflection on your worth. It's an opportunity to instruct. We're not trying to win Parent of the Year. Our focus should be on teaching our kids to develop discernment, moral values, and compassion for the people around them. We should keep our eyes off ourselves and on the precious lives entrusted to us by God. Remember, it's not about you.
Want more help from Mark Grayston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line at this time by Dr. Julie Slattery, who is coming to the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul, specifically to Berean Church in Burnsville, as part of a conference they're hosting there on January 19th titled Rethinking Sexuality. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you on the program. Certainly, there's going to be any number of directions we're going to be able to go with this topic. There's so much that we could bite off relative to it. But in terms specifically of the Rethinking Sexuality Conference, it's in line with a book that you've recently released as well. Just tell us a little bit, give us an overview of the conference, of your book, and part of what you're addressing there.
Yeah, so I've been leading a ministry called Authentic Intimacy for the last 6 or 7 years, exclusively dealing with sexual issues and working with Christians. And the Rethinking Sexuality book and conference has come out of what I've seen in terms of the pain that I've seen in the Christian church, as well as some of the ways that we haven't really been equipped or we haven't addressed sexual issues in a way that is constructive to people's healing. So a lot of what I'll be talking about is really going back and rethinking, you know, why is sexuality important as a follower of Christ? What does it mean that God created our sexuality? And then getting really practical about how do we live that out with integrity, and how do we minister to people around us that are struggling with issues related to sexuality and who are seeking truth about God's design for sex.
Boy, there's a lot to get into in that one, Julie, and you referenced the idea that the church has been silent quite often on these topics. I find that growing up, and as I ask my students if they've talked about sexuality in the church, that if they did at all, it tended to be around February 14th in youth group, where they might spend a week discussing a few different topics at that point. And other than that, the church was pretty silent on it. Have you seen an emergence where more and more Christians are starting to want to talk about these issues?
Yeah, I am. I mean, it's just a matter of the pain levels getting so great that we have to talk about it. And also just the confusion. Our culture has a very definite view of sexuality and sexual issues. And they're persistent in training us how to think about sexuality from a cultural context. And if the church stays silent, then even people that love God, that read their Bible, have difficulty thinking about sexuality from a godly perspective. But unfortunately, I think even the efforts of a lot of churches and Christian organizations today are more focused around problem solving. You know, they'll pick a problem like pornography or like how to talk through LGBT issues and simply address that, which is better than silence for sure. But when we only talk about problems, we're never getting back to what does wholeness look like? What does wellness look like? And even the fact that all of us, you know, regardless of what kind of problems we might be dealing with, every single one of us needs to know what it looks like to surrender our sexuality to the Lordship of Jesus Christ and how the Bible applies to our particular circumstances.
So, Julie, when you talk about a church maybe being willing to open the box for the first time and not just be addressing a specific issue, that there needs to be maybe a more significant foundation put underneath that before addressing the issues, and you talk about things like wholeness, if a church wanted to start opening the topic on this and wanted to go that direction, what do you suggest in terms of pursuing what sexual wholeness can really look like?
Yeah, that's why I wrote the book Rethinking Sexuality, just to give a starting place for that, because I know it's a huge topic. And again, I've had the opportunity over the last 6 or 7 years to dive deeply into this and put together some thoughts of a starting place. If you can come to the conference, that would be a great first step, getting the book Rethinking Sexuality. We have a small group curriculum that just kind of walks people through some of the basics. But holistically, it's looking at the entire story of the Bible, not just picking a few verses that deal specifically with sexuality, but what is the overarching story of God's covenant love, and why is sexuality in the Old Testament and New Testament used as a metaphor of that covenant love? So it is a deeper dive than just, tell me how I should address a problem with pornography or how I should fix sex in my marriage. We've got to go back to, again, that worldview of why does God care about this in my life, and then how do I walk that out?
Talking with Dr. Julie Slattery this morning about her book, Rethinking Sexuality, and also a conference coming up here. If you're anywhere close to the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, highly recommend taking some time next Saturday on January 19th, from 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock to attend this conference, especially as a way to maybe sort of break the paralysis so many of us feel in even just addressing these topics. And Julie, when you get into some of these topics and you reference the idea that we might just want to take on one issue or one topic, this whole topic of sexuality is quite interconnected, and you can't really isolate one of the topics without thinking through some of the other ones. Is that sort of what you find as you've been researching and practicing and helping people in these areas?
Well, I think the problem with just tackling one topic is, first of all, people feel categorized. So a great example of this is the conversations that are happening in the church around LGBT. People that are struggling with LGBT issues or asking those questions feel like the conversation around sexuality pigeonholes them as the people that are broken with a problem, and everybody else is fine. And it's hypocritical, because they'll say, hey, in your church you're bashing LGBT, but you're not addressing the fact that pastors are having affairs and marriages are breaking apart and singles are all sleeping together. And really, that's a criticism that Jesus had of the religious leaders in his day. It wasn't that he erased morality, but he said, before you can speak to the world, you have to be honest about your own brokenness, about your own pain. And in the Christian church, we are not being honest about maybe the normalized brokenness and the ways that we don't honor God's design for sexuality. And so when we try to talk about a specific issue, it feels inauthentic, and it doesn't bring really the full weight of the gospel and how it has impacted our lives. And so, that's just one example. I think another good example is what we kind of refer to as the purity narrative, that is very simplistic, that says, hey, if you save yourself for marriage and don't have sex until you get married, God's going to bring a wonderful husband or wife, and you're going to have great sex in marriage. And that's way too simplistic, and many people will find that it's actually not even true. And so when we present sexuality in a simplistic formula like that, we're really not grappling with the issues that people are struggling through and looking at the scripture. What does God really say, and what does he really promise us?
That's such an important part of this conversation, it seems. I don't know for you, but I've come to believe that any room I step into, myself included, that there's going to be some level of brokenness in sexuality. So don't be surprised by it. The question is how do we surface it? And then how do we find healing and maybe some hope in the midst of it? So, Julie, when we come back from a short break here in just a minute, I would love to get your insight and your wisdom on just that subject. What are some starting points, assuming that we've all been touched in some way by some level of brokenness in our sexuality? How can we start moving towards redemption and hope on this very tricky subject? So more to come with Dr. Julie Slattery next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're chatting with Dr. Julie Slattery this morning, who authored a book, Rethinking Sexuality, part of 10 books that Julie has written. She does quite a bit of work in counseling, speaking, consulting, all of these things relative to subjects on sexuality in our country. And if you're outside the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, I highly recommend coming to Berean Baptist Church on January 19th from 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock. You can go to BereanBaptist.com to sign up for a conference that Julie is leading on that day. And Julie, not just the books and some of the speaking and consulting you do, but you have a podcast as well.
Yeah, I have a podcast called Job with Julie, and you know, a really big aspect of what we're trying to do with churches is to teach them this concept of sexual discipleship, which for most people that's a new term and they're like, what does that mean? But it's addressing sexual issues not with an educational perspective of you just go to one conference and you're good, but that we have a discipleship mentality that we continually need to learn how to apply God's word to the things that we're facing as singles, as married people, recovering from sexual abuse, dealing with cultural issues. And so Job with Julie is one of the tools that we use at our ministry for sexual discipleship. Every week we tackle a new topic around issues of sexuality, intimacy, just women's lives in particular, and help talk through, you know, how do I apply God's word and God's healing to that aspect of my life. So it's just one of the tools that we have to help people understand how to integrate their faith with sexuality.
I love that term, sexual discipleship, just because it tends to, it seems to me, at least when I first hear it, fly in the face of the idea that a conversation about sexuality is just a one-time thing. We do it as parents with our kids, explain sort of how it works and move on from there. Or it's maybe in a health class at a high school, or we talk about it only, like we've said before, on Valentine's Day at church. You're really inviting people into an ongoing process and journey and conversation on this.
Yeah, and actually, Peter, you know, that's what the culture has done. They've sexually discipled us. So you know, I guarantee you, if you think through the last few days, you have had different touch points with the culture telling you how to think about what's going on, how to think about R. Kelly situation, you know, how to think about LGBT agenda, how to think about pornography. It's in the movies you watch. It's in the TV shows. It's in the news, education. They have a discipleship model to train you in how to think. And unfortunately, I think most churches and Christian families at best will tell you what to think about a particular issue instead of training you in how to think. So, you know, that's really a paradigm shift that we've made in our ministry and one that we want to help other ministries and families make.
And what an important point. I've heard the comment before that it's not a question if we're going to be formed by something, it's by what we will be formed. And certainly the idea of being discipled by our culture and our sexuality. I think back to the TV show Friends and when I first started watching that in the 1990s and how shocking everything was from a content standpoint. But, Julie, that shocking became normative pretty quickly as we had been sort of discipled as a culture in all these things that previously would have been taboo. And that seems to be a pattern. I don't know if that's what you find in your ministry, but we move from shocking to normal just like that, and we don't have any sort of counter effects to all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, another example of that is just the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon that happened 4 or 5 years ago. So now things like BDSM are normalized in our culture. So absolutely. And if we look back 10 years ago at what even the average American believed about sexual morality, it's totally different than what we believe today. And that's not by accident. It's a concerted effort by culture to influence our thinking. And so we have to be just as missional as people of God to be ministering and also to be training the church in how to think through these issues.
And certainly as we do that, and you referenced before, that we want to have a foundation of wholeness underneath us about what is whole and healthy sexuality. But part of what we talked about before in the previous segment is assuming a level of brokenness in any given room. And Julie, if people do want to come into the light with some of their pain or some of their brokenness or concerns or whatever it all happens to be, what do you begin to suggest as a road towards health and wholeness, redemption, all of these things that are part of the kingdom of Jesus?
Yeah, you know, the first step for any of us is to come into the light with God, you know, to be honest with him. And you might be listening right now in your kitchen or in your car, and right in this moment, just, you know, you sense the Holy Spirit saying you've got some stuff that you need to deal with, and you start right there with the Lord. and acknowledging that, you know, God, this is an area of my life I've kind of kept you out of, and I don't want it to be that way anymore. And, you know, that's the first step we all need to take. But then a second step is, okay, who are you going to reach out to help you in that journey? And that's why we exist as a ministry. And that's why churches exist. That's why God has put godly friends in your life, people that you can trust, so that we can have these difficult conversations and pursue healing and truth together.
And Julie, what does healing and wholeness sort of look like when you do have a past? Because I think there's sort of a sense in which we sort of hope we can get some spiritual amnesia, or somehow the past didn't happen in our lives. But what is holy, sort of this wholeness and maybe a freedom look like into the future when you do have a sexual past of some kind?
Yeah, you know, it's the difference between integrating God into our past and splitting it off. You know, I think a lot of times what we want to do is to split off. Well, that was the old me. It doesn't impact me anymore. And even neurological research is showing how much, you know, our sexual experiences impact us at a neurological level. And some people have dreams, nightmares, flashbacks. They fear intimacy in their relationships today because of what they've experienced. And there's footholds. You know, they believe lies, like God could never really heal me, or I don't deserve great pleasure in my marriage because I messed up in the past. So integrating is when we ask God, would you bring so much healing and redemption in my life that actually I'm not afraid to talk about this anymore, because I can talk about who you are, Jesus, and that you really have forgiven me. And that can be a process of working with a counselor through some of those things, through praying through some of those things, working with a friend, working in, if you're married, a marriage relationship to address the things that have happened. But that kind of healing doesn't just happen without you being intentional about it. And so that might be what God is calling you to do now in terms of intentionality.
One of the questions I often get is in terms of, can somebody's sense of desire change a bit, Julie, as part of this healing and wholeness process? And maybe somebody has, you know, long-term desire to be part of a pornography kind of network, or be always clicking on the links in the internet, or maybe same gender desire, or even some of the confusion in transgenderism about our sense of self. Is there the possibility that God brings some different things in alignment? I know God is not a genie in a bottle that we just make one prayer and sort of our wish is granted on that level. But what is the process along those lines in terms of even our sexual desire?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's so many people that can share personal testimonies of how God has brought them out of a place of sexual addiction, out of a place of feeling really crippled and wounded by sexual trauma. I can't tell you that there's a formula for how we do that or exactly what that looks like, because God is a very individual God and works with us individually. But there certainly are some steps that people take in terms of what does it look like to surrender desires that I know have been distorted by the enemy. And some of those steps, you know, we've already mentioned in terms of reaching out to somebody who can help you. You know, that might be a trusted friend, but it also might be a Christian counselor who is trained in some of these issues that can help ask the right questions, help point you to the right resources, and help you really pursue a deeper healing or truth. We find that most people don't just change their desires by white-knuckling it, you know, by telling themselves, don't think about this, you know, let me just ignore this. You know, even in 1 John, it talks about don't walk in the darkness anymore, bring it into the light. And in James, it talks about, you know, confessing our sins one to another so that we might be healed. And so community and honesty and authenticity are always a part of walking towards significant healing in any area, including sexuality.
Well, I love it, Dr. Slattery. This is such an important topic. We're out of time, unfortunately, for this morning, but I do want to highlight for you listening again this morning multiple ways in which you can engage in this topic. You can come to the conference here on the 19th of January from 8 to 4 at Berean Baptist outside of Burnsville, Minnesota. And if you need more information about that, feel free to text the studio at 877-933-2484. Rachel or I or Paul, somebody can get you further information along those lines. Julie also has the book, Rethinking Sexuality, that would be available, Julie, I assume, through the normal channels, the Amazons of the world.
That's right.
And then Java with Julie. Where do we go when we want to hear that podcast? And you've got the great J in front of your name, so Java with Julie works. But I can't find anything for the P in front of my name.
Hey, you just have to keep thinking, right? Java with Julie is available at iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you might download a podcast on your smartphone. And it's also available at our website, AuthenticNMC.com. And Julie does not have an E, so it's just Java with J-U-L-I.
Love it. Well, I would love to, when the conference is done, maybe we can get back together here on Faith Radio Mornings and debrief about how it went.
That sounds great.
And that was our interview with Dr. Julie Slattery yesterday that I taped, and it was just a fantastic time. I so appreciate the work that she did. I went to her website and saw all of the topics that she addresses, and she really does get into everything related to sexuality in our culture. As a guy, you know, if you listen who's taught about sexuality the last 10 years, to see that there is really nobody talking about it back when we started about 10 years ago, and now see all of the possibilities that we can engage with to get through this tricky subject, Dr. Julie Slattery is really a very helpful resource along those lines. Well, that wraps up our show for today and for the week. I hope you have a great weekend ahead and that we can fix our eyes on Jesus together again when we meet on Faith Radio Mornings next Monday morning.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.